Kish. Kish is a very interesting, oh, very ancient city. And if we start the slideshow from the beginning by hitting refresh on your computer, the slideshows will go in order. So anytime you want to start at the beginning, just hit refresh. Anytime you want to stop the slideshow, put your cursor on one of the artifacts or maps or whatever is displayed. Just put your cursor there, the slideshow stops, and a brief description pops up. If the description is blocking your view, then put the cursor on the picture adjacent, and it keeps the slideshow from running and gives you a clear picture of what you want to look at. Okay? So let's look at the second map here, slide number two. It says, and I'm not going to just sit here and read this to you, there is a point to this, so please bear with me, this one's important. And nobody knows about Kish. So let's do this. Kish is the first city on Earth re-granted kingship by Enlil. It's Ninhursag City. Ninhursag being the chief medical science officer of the those who came down. She is directly related to the king by being a daughter between the king and his concubine, making her just like Enki of the same parents. Ninhursag and Enki are the one true love thing that's really happening in Mesopotamia. Inanna comes across as the goddess of love, so you don't hear much about Ninhursag and Enki. And here you get to learn a little bit about Ninhursag and Enki. So on Kish, you're talking about a restart. And it's a restart of the human life on Earth. Why? Well, because in the beginning, kingship didn't exist in cavemen. Cavemen had no need for a king. So what was happening here is as those who came down and colonized the Earth, because they need the minerals, especially the gold. So the idea was, we're going to be here a while. Let's set up a colony on the top side, and we'll do it right where we landed in the Persian Gulf. And we'll use this fertile valley between the four rivers. Two of them are ancient and not only visible from space. There's one on the outside of Euphrates and one on the outside of the Tigris. That makes four rivers dumping into the Persian Gulf. And between those rivers is the fertile lands of Eden, where everything began. Everything. Man literally went from caveman to civilized man in these cities, which became city-states as man began to increase in number. And how did man even get started? It begins with Ninhursag and Enki. So let's follow this. So in Kish, let's look at the location. You can see it's on the river, straight up from the Persian Gulf. We're talking about Iraq here. Not exactly southern Iraq like Ur or Lagash, but Iraq. And if you follow that river, you'll go through a few nations that are today. So you can see civilization was began along these rivers. Why? Because you need the rivers. Everybody, civilization needs that river water. These guys used it for transportation as well. Why? Would they need that? They came for the gold, and the gold is in South Africa. They got to ship that gold on up to Sumer, which you're looking at right here on the map. And in the Eden, there were like 300 of these alien gods who look just like us, and they're giants, 14, 16 feet giants. They came down, they established their houses in these locations, and as they do the work, because sitting here in Kish and Nippur and all these towns, cities you're looking at, all they were is the location of those who came down, houses. So and so, for instance, Nanner lived in Ur, and who would visit, stay in Uruk, and Nana lived there, so did Ninsun, so did Martu. We can go to Kish, that's Nenherzog. We go to Nippur, very important, that's Command Central, that's Enlil. You see what I'm saying? This is where they lived. And before man existed, they're doing the work. They're in the Garden of Eden, and there's their houses. And with that comes farming and clothes making and whatever the hell they need to smelt that gold and ship it. And how do they ship it? First, they get rid of the waste that's on the gold. So they smelt it down to pure gold. Wait till they got a load. There's 300 digging that gold and 300 up there in the Garden of Eden setting up the colony. These are from scratch. This is hard work. And then you're talking about approximately 300 either on Mars or they're space trucking between Earth to Mars, Mars to their planet. Their planet is Nibiru. And if you check out the Nibiru page, you'll learn much more about it. But it has an elongated orbit. It takes 3,600 years on their orbit. While we orbit 3,600 times, they orbit once. We age 3,600 years, they aged 1 year. It's hard to imagine. They're immortal. To the human beings, that means they're immortal. But they can be killed. They do bleed. Very strange. And they look just like us. Very strange. So let me explain this. Here they are landed. They've established themselves in Sumer. They're bringing the gold up there. And once they got a load, they send it to Mars. Why Mars? Their planet comes through every 3,600 years. Just on the outside of Mars, where the asteroid belt is, it is their planet who created the asteroid belt. Please go to Nibiru page, you'll learn all about it. Anyway, as you see, this website will explain just about everything to you, if you follow through with it. So here is the gods living in these and establishing these ziggurats. They get tired of doing the work down in the gold mine. These space truckers have no girls. The guys in the gold mine have no girls. And damn near everybody up in Eden has no girls. What? What a bad plan this is. So the only girls around are direct descendants of the king. They're not available to the other 900. There are no girls for all these Anunnaki men doing this hard labor. So let's keep that in mind. They get tired, Inky's groups in the mine and Lil's in the garden. And on Mars is Mardik. And he sets up warehousing. He sets up everything needed to store the gold there until their planet comes by. Takes 3,600 years to wait. And then they dump it off on their planet because it's such a short distance. And Mars has less gravity than we, so it's easier to blast off. Lots of reasons to have Mars as a way station. Get it here, send it there, safekeeping too, I guess. And then from there, dump it. Now imagine, everything they want that they find on Earth besides that gold. Everything they want to take back, they do. And as they take back, no space trucker's going to be empty. They got to carry both ways. So as they take items from Earth or DNA or whatever it is they want, minerals, from Earth to Mars back to their planet. What do they bring back? Whatever's needed, whatever's being requested by Enlil in those in the Garden of Eden, and he's the Earth colony commander. He's next in line to be king. So he's calling the shots on the colony. It's all under the king's son and heir, Crown Prince Enlil. Inky's in the background. Even though he's the oldest, smartest by far, he doesn't get into the ruling end of things. So he sits on Earth just simply there to help, and he brings a lot of help. Here sits these people in the mine, Inky's group, going, we're not doing this. They literally strike, and they literally march all the way up the Nipper. It scares the hell out of Enlil. So Enlil goes, whoa, eventually, and after saying, go back. Enlil says, this is a problem I cannot solve. I'll have the king come down and solve this. So now the problem is between Enlil and what he wants, Inky and what he wants, which is simply replacement workers. They're in the mines. And the space truckers and what they want. Nobody has any women. So the king comes down. He's not bringing women. After he fixed draw the straws, he goes back with the same authority back to Nibiru. They were drawing for authorities. And Enlil goes right back to the Garden of Eden, and Inky is stuck right back in the mines. Inky's not going to take this anymore because his workers won't. So what does Inky do? If you'll go to his page or Nen Herzog's page, you will see they take animals and mix them and do everything they can to try to create a worker to carry the load. The gods are carrying this load. They don't like it. I mean, these are far advanced beings. And here they are digging the ditches and farming in the fields, tilling soil that's never been tilled, and so on and so forth. Everything is pristine. Everything. So they come in and they set this operation up. And the king approves the operation, good plan, and it's rolling. Except for the labor's too hard. They got no replacements. Nobody gives a damn. Inky's stuck. Inky says, hell with this. So he goes through all this nightmare of mixing animals and then mixing them. I mean, he'd have a half Anunnaki and I have lion or bull or some damn thing. He's looking for a worker, but he can't figure out how to get a worker with hands and feet and can take, listen, take orders, not rebel, and on and on and on. Everything you need in a happy camper that's busting his ass in the mines. Good luck. They're not happy. So Inky develops Homo erectus that he discovers as walking around South Africa. Homo erectus becomes overnight Homo sapien. Because of what they did, Homo sapien now is told to multiply because they need workers. So they take the Atapa, they take Adam, model man, they put him in Sumer with one purpose. Produce children as fast as you can. We want workers. So he's got 1,000 kids. Isn't that wonderful? He lives a long time. The first son that comes out, they hand farming to him. Why? Because Enlil's son was doing the farming. So the first worker, relief, goes to Enlil's son, tilling the soils in the Garden of Eden. That's Cain. The next son is given to the task of herding the sheep and watching over the cows in the pens. So now you're talking about handing that over to the earthlings. That's their food. So here's the fields, here's their meat, and they've handed that to the earthlings. Now, they wait a while, they see how the earthlings do this creation, which is no creation, that comes from Inky and Herzog. Enlil is against it. He wants to see how they do. And all of a sudden, Enlil's going, I want more of these workers. So they start fighting over the workers. I mean, Enlil's not giving Inky any slack. So Enlil's got all the power. Now he's trying to take all the workers. Not going to happen. So they fight over that. And they got to produce. Reproduce quickly. So one goes to Inky's side, which is the responsibility of Dumuzi, a son of Inky's. One goes to Enlil's side. He's in the farm. And that's the son of Enlil. Well, they finally say, well, let's bring them together, have a feast, see how we did. So they bring, they're so happy. The earthling is bringing, see all the crops I grew, look what I can do. See all this? Wow, I really did it, says Cain. And here comes this other brother, and he's going, take a look how fat and juicy these boys are. Wow, did I do it, and didn't lose any of them. But why? Because Dumuzi showed me how to do it. The great shepherd, he's the god known as Dumuzi the shepherd. So you know, the gods did the work before man. So here comes man doing the work, saying, look what I did, look what I did. And all of a sudden the gods go, wow, look at those fat. Lambs, look at that sheep. Let's have some dinner. I tell you what, nice job, Abel. Uh-oh, Cain is jealous as hell because they like lamb. They brought it from their planet. They like it. And they thanked him. Good job. Well, Cain gets jealous, kills him, and he's ordered east of Eden, carrying the mark of Cain. It is my belief the mark of Cain is no facial hair. And so Cain is placed by Ninurta, the guy who worked him in the field. He is placed, in my opinion, China. And there begins the line of Cain. And there's even a text, a cuneiform text, about the line of Cain. I wish I had the translation, but I do not. But I know that text exists. So I'm presenting everything I can. If I can find more, I'll bring it. Anyway, so you're looking at the Garden of Eden right there. And all of a sudden, the people begin to gather as they multiply around these ziggurats that are in these city-states. Why? Because they are workers for the gods. And they have multiplied. Wonderful. So clickety-clickety-clickety-click, we hand over more work, clothes making. You do the sewing, you do this, you do that. And one after another is handed over to the earthling. Gibble, the god of the kilns, has all the metallurgy skills, and primitive man's going to learn this stuff. You see what I'm trying to tell you? Man did not invent this. This was given to man and told to go to work. That's why you're here, to go to work. That was their plan under Incian and Herzog, trying to get some relief. That's it. That's it. And because they did that, some don't like men and women that are earthlings. That might be Enlil. Some do. That might be Nin Herzog and Enki. Can you tell why? One is an abomination, says Enlil. Enki says, you want to do the work? And so it continues. Enki had the right idea, and we come about. The only problem is, let's go on down the line. So now you see where it's all happening in the beginning. Look at the next one, slide 2AA. Excuse me. I'll try to keep my whistle wet. I'm sorry. 2AA, you're looking at ancient cuneiform or cuneiform writing. And that is on clay. And you can see some of that is just through time, through actual thousands upon thousands of years. This clay has had some problems, but it did survive. It's wet clay with a stylus poking a language into the wet clay. Then it's fired hot to where it's like a rock. And when they discovered these towns, and they didn't until biblical archaeologists come out of Europe looking to prove that the Bible is a historical a document as well as a religious. So they want to find the cities that are listed in the Torah or Old Testament. So they go through this part of the world looking for those cities, believing that the garden came from this part of the world, which they are correct. So what they're doing is looking through Iraq, maybe a little Syria, but mostly Iraq, up those rivers. And they find about every 50 miles, there's another one of these ziggurats. They call them tells. Looks like a mountain, but something's weird. So when they finally erase all the mud that's on top of this big mountain called the pyramid, a step pyramid called the ziggurat, how in the world did that thing get buried with mud? How does mud go uphill? That's my question. But anyway, so here they come excavating these, thinking it might be something, because they're looking for these ancient cities. And some of them actually are the ziggurats, and they start excavating. It takes many years, and all of a sudden they start finding stairways, and then later they find actual cities down below. And when they find the cities, they find libraries. What? And not only do they find libraries by the, say, 1,000 or 10,000 tablets, they also find artifacts. And let's talk about thousands per city that they find. For instance, Nineveh, where the whale spit up Jonah. Remember Jonah and the whale? He was told to preach in Nineveh. He's grabbed by an underwater. Imagine if you had a submarine or a flying saucer that'll go underwater and spit you up out of the ocean right where they tell you to go and preach the word of God. That is what happened to Noah. He's in the belly of the whale. What else are they going to call it? It's a submersible something or other, and it takes him to Nineveh. That's when you start finding out what the facts are. So here we're staring at four pieces of information. And on those four pieces of information is an actual list of the very first kings. Now, I direct you to Genesis 6. And somewhere down the line there, a couple paragraphs, 6-4, I'll say, somewhere around there. It says, when the sons of God came down to earth, they saw that the women were beautiful, the sons of men were, the daughters were beautiful, and they took any of them they want. And they had children by them. And the children became the heroes and old men of renown. And what I'm trying to tell you is those biblical heroes of old, men of renown, are on this artifact right there. 2AA. You're looking at the exact list of kings from the very beginning, which is before the flood, up to, I don't know, whatever it is when Sumer died, 500 BC, somewhere, okay? Sumer dies for another reason. That's a nuclear war between Enlil's descendants and Enki's descendants. It really gets hot between these cousins. Cousin versus cousin. Who's right, Enki? And why his family should be at least running the colony or in the big arguments. So here you read these kings, and it's a must. You've got to read the Sumerian kings list to believe it. But when you find out that these heroes of old, men of renown, were living very long lives, and these children of the sons of God, but daughters of man, isn't that a mixed breed, mixing of two breeds? So, and they all looked identical. We looked just like them because we were fashioned in their image to take their orders and do the work. But anyway, here's what they did. They brought kingship down to earth because it is established where they come from. And when they handed authority to their children, their heroes of old, men of renown, these Nephilim mixed breeds, they're going to let them be go-betweens between the gods and the earthlings. The earthlings are gathering down below these ziggurats in every single city-state. It grows into a city-state. And then it's a battle for who's got power over these city-states. who will be the new capital of Mesopotamia? And that goes on and on. But the real battle is between Enlil's descendants and Enki's descendants. Mardukhates Ninurta, who's third in line to the king, Ninurta hates Marduk. Enlil's granddaughter marries Enki's son, Dumuzi. Remember that? Except for Dumuzi later dies. And Enlil's granddaughter, who becomes the goddess of love and war, she is heartbroken to the max. That's her one true love out there, and they were feeding the cows and tending the sheep. They were in love, and life was beautiful for them, while others are working their asses off, setting up the colony. Lo and behold, Dumuzi makes a mistake, rapes his sister, and makes Marduk mad as hell, the older brother, oldest brother. And Marduk chases him. And in this chase, he ends up dead. I'm not sure exactly how, but he drowns. And the water damage to his body is so great by the time they find him that Enki cannot revive him. He cannot bring him back because of water damage to Dumuzi's decaying body. So what happens? War between Marduk and his family, descendants, and Ninurta and his. And who's going to be the fighting? These kings listed right here. They're going to take the orders. And who's going to be dying? Those earthlings down there. So the mixed breed demigod Nephilim are going to take the order from the god who lives in the pyramid. So he set up somebody, a god's offspring, to run the city. And he gives him the rules, the laws. And he hands it down to the earthlings and keeps them in shape like a circus director. He's keeping them in shape, okay? So then on the religious side of things, you have the god living in that ziggurat. Why shouldn't he have some workers? So he's got one of these offspring who actually get to live somewhat with him in that ziggurat. Imagine living with God. And that is your high priest. And so God would give the high priest what his responsibilities are, and that is keeping the people loyal to God through whatever ceremonies, feasts, whatever. You keep them loyal to God, and so you do what God says through the king. And now you have civilized people in a civilization. And so it begins, at least a chance at it. And when you read this king's list, you're going to see some of these kings who first established kingship on earth. It is ridiculous how long they live. And for those who think earth is 6,000 years old, I say to you, please, maybe this will offend you. Maybe you shouldn't go any further on this recording, because from here on you might not like or believe what I'm having to say anyway. So it's not for you. Those who came here because they're interested in what's here, please listen and stick with me. I'm going to try to lay it out for you. So there it is. There is the list of kings. There is the proof of what happened. At least man was trying to get started before the flood. And then why would you have the flood? Look at all these kings that are needed to rule workers. Why would God in the Torah or the Old Testament, Why would he bring a flood? You need the workers. And everybody fought over, I want workers, I want workers. Everybody was so excited to get workers. Why all of a sudden we're going to kill everything on Earth? Who would do that? As sure as hell ain't Inky and Herzog. That was ordered by Enlil. You know, the guy who thinks this is an abomination. You have no right to create entire new species. What are you doing? And he and his brother, the smart one, just disagree. Totally disagree. Well, Inky doesn't run things. Enlil is going to kill everything Inky did. Kill them all. I mean, all of them. And everything else. And Inky's going, that's not very wise, is it? Well, shit. Enlil pulls every one of these alien gods that are giants. He pulls them all in and he says, you will not tip the earthlings off to this whatsoever. But we're leaving for a while. You decide where you want to go. But I advise you go, reason being, I'm going to flood it all out. I'm going to kill them all. And you never speak this to the earthlings. Okay, they all agree. That's the commander saying this. They agree. So they make their plans on who's going to go down in the ocean, who's going to go on the dark side of the moon, who will hide in the mountain, who will just sit in orbit. They make their plans. They have plenty of places to go. They can go to Mars. They got plenty of places to go. And those bring in a flood. Now, how's he going to do that? If you take an asteroid and throw it into the ocean, anywhere near that Persian Gulf, you just wiped out man. And you wiped out everything else that's down there. And lo and behold, that flood might have gone worldwide. The more we learn about it, that is one hell of a flood. No, it wasn't. That was a hell of a tidal wave, and then another tidal wave, and another one. And it put mud all the way up on these damn pyramids. It was a flood that buried those things. So anyway, but not the final. That's not the final mud up there. After the flood, they cleaned that mud off. That's their houses. And they restarted again. And a restart of kingship and a restart of earthlings being developed right along the ziggurats again. Same thing. And they got rid of them all. Well, here's the story. You're listening to it right here. And then wants them all dead. Inky has a mixed breed demigod son that I guess nobody knew about until he was born. His name is Noah. They called him Zoosadra. And you'll find his texts and texts about the flood anywhere that had written languages that could write it down, because the flood was a major event. It was recorded. So to read the actual recordings from Mesopotamia is my choice. So that's what I try to do. I don't read cuneiform. I look for the translations. They've been hidden from us as these artifacts. Right here on those four stones. Written in cuneiform, very first writing on Earth, is information man could not write, is information man could not know, is information man did not live long enough to know. It's not possible. Right there is proof of what I'm saying, and right there is a very valuable written record. How could it be more? If you're an earthling, that's a valuable record. Far more to me than a book that comes thousands of years after this stuff. It's just, look at the original. If it's going to be too much, please do not continue. Just, you know, take a gander and that's it. Do not think about this. For those who can think deeply and wish understanding, you have come to the right place. You have hit pay dirt. Spend some time. Okay, so here are the kings. And in these kings, they're living like crazy. And that has to be a semi-god that is a demigod, right? That is a mixed breed. That too, so here's how it goes. The earthlings, say 5 feet, I'm just giving an example. The demigod, the made king or high priest, he's probably 10 feet, yeah. And read the text, he's living thousands of years as king, thousands. Read the text. And then you have the gods, who are about 14 feet and live forever as far as anybody's concerned. So it's a mix of the gods' clock and the earthlings' clock. And you have a smaller version of the gods and a bigger version of the earthlings. It's a mix. And it was made to reproduce, and it did under Adam. And all these kings come about only because they had sex with the daughters of men that Enki fashioned. And after a while, that primitive girl looks a little better to a whole bunch of aliens with no women. Now imagine a giant with your woman, because that's what they did. They took any woman they want. Who's going to stop them? And with that comes a whole flood of these demigods. And in the one of them all gone, and here they got to do it all again. It's just crazy. And it's done under Noah. Two sons that survive go directly to work under Enlil's ideas, and one son Shem, I think it is given under the Enki needs, okay? And, you know, there's realms of responsibility for each of these aliens. Like I said, truckers, miners. Even with the replacements of earthlings, they still have their responsibility. So they're overlooking these kings, and you either do what they say and be loyal to the god, or you're going to be replaced quickly. Don't mess with God. And then you have punishments, and then later, because the cousins aren't getting along, and because this city-state is loyal to Enlil's side, and this city-state is loyal to Enki's side, and they're kind of struggling for supremacy on Earth. Here comes the wonderful thing that they teach man finally, after all these other things they teach man. They teach us how to kill each other. Yeah, we learned war from alien gods because they didn't like what their cousin was doing. And their cousin didn't like an idiot in their mind running things. I mean, it's just an ugly mess. And this is how they did things on their planet. Through force, because they have a one world order, one king for the whole planet. You think that happened peacefully? So they got damage to their planet. They need the gold to fix the holes that they blew in their nuclear wars. They're not fans of nuclear war much. It's supposed to be forbidden. Now, take that to today. You know, to get off subject here, just a short brief period. Supposedly, there was a guy, and they have a photo of this, that showed up, told Reagan, get rid of the nukes. Told Reagan to tell Gorbachev, we got to get rid of the nukes. And for the very first time, they started to decline in number. And you hear things like the START nuclear treaty and so forth. Reagan, through this alien, because he was gone after he gave the message, Reagan tried five times in his speeches to the UN to tell us about this. And I'll just kind of do it briefly. He says, and every time he put this in a speech, his speechwriters remove it. So he said, hell with it, I'll just wing it, which they never do. Reagan goes off speech and he says, you know, I wonder, this is at the UN, with all the differences we have between the Soviet Union and us and him and him and him and him, I wonder, could we ever get together as one, say, if the planet was attacked, would we come together? Now, here is a guy who five times tried to make that speech and did at the UN. He wasn't allowed to do that speech. He did it five times. He had a visitor, and he told him, get rid of the nukes. Well, you can see how many people now have nukes, and just the opposite happened. You can add China, and maybe even Iran to that, but you can add Israel, Pakistan, you know, you hear what I'm saying? India. There's way too many for the gods who came down and forbid nukes. But somehow, at the very same time, the Nazis were just at the nuclear business when we came up with it first. But believe me, they were ahead of us. We jumped on it and came up with it first, trying to beat the Nazis to a nuke. And it was that nuke that ended that damn war, because the Japanese would never surrender. Nazis finally did, after they split, and lived on. That's another story. Hitler did not die. Do you know, you're not going to like the truth. So here we go. There is a list of kings, and it's giving you your pure history. And you're here looking at only artifacts and translations. It is this audio is the only time you're getting opinions. And I'm telling you, this is an opinion. And I'm trying to bring knowledge. And by the way, you notice I didn't no charge here. There's a reason for that. One, I don't own this stuff and these images. And two, I want to bring them to everybody. I'm not interested in your dollar. I'm interested in the exposure here. So, which has never been done, not organized and presented from all angles right out of Mesopotamia. This is what they said back then when they could do all these things walking right out of the cave. Now, you want to believe that, you go ahead. If you read Genesis and added up, Adam lived so long, and then Seth lived so long, and then so-and-so, and so on. The first 10 generations down to Noah, every one of them married their sister. Is that shocking? Isn't that taboo in Hebrew? Every one of them married their sister. If they had no sister, they married their half-sister. If they had neither of those, then they married their first cousin. If they have none of that, they will never have an heir. You see, they use these earthling demigods, they use the exact same law of the king's successor as the aliens do. So we copy that custom, we copy this, that. We didn't invent anything. Nothing. It was reinvented or given to earthlings by the very people you look like, only much bigger, and they have technology. You got nothing here. So as we go through ruins of Kish, you're getting an idea of what a brick, mud brick, can do. Look at that. How many mud bricks does that take? That's labor. Who in the hell wants to build this wall for that city? Let's face it. When you got earthlings, there's a lot more work to do. So they build walls. And they have cigarettes and walls and war. Here we go, right through the day. So as you scroll through there, you'll see, for instance, on 2D, it's a 1926 excavation picture, and you got this mess that looks like a city perhaps down below, and this mountain sitting out there. And this mountain, as you take away the debris, has stairways up the mountain that nobody gets to use unless you're a giant demigod, mixed breed, descendant, king. The king comes up, gets his orders, goes back down. The high priest comes down, gives a few celebrations, a few reminders of God, and goes back up. He is the butler to the god who is living in that mountain, that brick-built mountain. You see how many bricks it takes to make that wall? How many do you think it takes to build that mountain? Because it's all brick. Mud brick. Good soil brick. What? The land between the rivers, and it's plentiful. So here comes all this soil, building all these civilizations for man, so man could learn how to do this shit himself. You're just the worker. Now, here's the experiment. Do it yourself. Oh. Well, we haven't done too well. So anyway, we had these demigods to help us. For a long time, to direct us, as I've already said. And sooner or later, the gods are going to say later, we're no longer visible. We don't walk with man. Here we did. And that's worth looking at. So as you go through these pages, I strongly, strongly urge you to flip around and see what that god's doing or that town's doing. You're not going to believe what you see. So here are artifacts that are coming out of Kish. I've got one in particular I'd like to draw you to. Artifact number 5. I've got to wet my whistle, excuse me. Artifact 5. Move your cursor over to Artifact 17A so we can view Artifact 5. What you see there on the left is a stone. That is rock. And it is carved into that little small cylinder. That is a very smooth shaped rock. Okay, and that rock may be different. It could be this type of rock or that type of rock. But you're talking about a rock that will last thousands of years. Let's keep this in mind. These gods were doing this for thousands of years. They didn't do it for 1 week of Earthlings. All this is recording is for us today, if you think about it. So we'll go on. You do some deep thinking here. So to the left, you're looking at a stone. Then that stone has a negative image, a reverse carving on that stone. Somebody's carving stone, and somebody's doing it in the reverse. And somebody is giving you detail like you see to the right. You see that? Do you think primitive man can reshape that stone, reverse carve that image and hold that in his mind, and then, by golly, we're going to roll this stone on wet clay and form this image? We've just created the printing press, the copy machine, the media. Because what we do here is we roll this event, which is very important and must be recorded. Too bad we don't have the text to match up. They split it all up. Very hard to put this together, so no one has. Here you're seeing it for the first time in the whole story, or at least part of the story of the Earthling. Are you interested? Here's your story. So here's the guy here on the right. Take a look. Those are giant aliens. How do I know that? Take a look at the hat. Those hats are animal horns. The only ones wearing the animal horns on Earth are direct descendants to the king. All the other giant aliens do not wear royal crowns. That's their royal crown on Earth, okay? It's an animal horn. And if you'll take a look real closely, these gods are fighting each other. And if you take a look at, say, the first god, he's in struggling with some god down below. The first god's got his foot on what that is the ziggurat on somebody's house while he struggles with some other god, okay? Then you have the next two pair that are struggling, and one of these guys has got his foot on an Earthling. And then we go to the next one, and that's a female in the battle, huh? And then we go on and on. And you're going to see, what in the hell? These gods hate each other. And very soon, the gods on the right are his loyal Earthlings are fighting the gods on the left and his loyal Earthlings. Do you think that's happening today? Do you think the god that's looking after communism and Islam is in war with the god looking after Judaism and Christianity? Do you see anything that might match that? Do you want to know why you have this religion and he has that religion? Do you want to know why he speaks this language and he speaks that language? You can thank Enlil for all of this. Enlil's Earth Colony Commander, no one can doubt his word. Enlil's word cannot be changed. That's a direct quote. You will not change Enlil's command. He's the commander, period. If you like to live, you're not going to try to mess with his authority either. Well, Inky's son Marduk says bullshit. We're messing with authority, and one of the main reasons we are is take a look at artifact right next to it, 17A. 17A, what's that say? Inky lands on Earth in the Persian Gulf, donned the fissure suit, swims to shore. That's what that is. That's a wetsuit. It's not a fissure suit. But he acts like a fish and swims to shore and meets Alalu, a renegade who killed the king, waiting on the shores of the Persian Gulf, and he's going to show Inky there is gold on this planet. And he's going to go from a real shithead who killed the king to, I'm the savior of our planet. Make me king. Which was his plan all along. King Anu up on the planet, while this guy runs the Earth to hide. Earth is behind the asteroid belt, which is the forbidden zone. Nobody will chase him through the forbidden zone, and that's why he went through the forbidden zone, and he took his flying saucer with 8 nukes, and he nuked his way through the asteroid belt, and he lands on Earth because it's got the atmosphere, it's got the water. So he radios back and says, hey, I know you're hunting me, but I'm over here and I found gold and sweet water and good air and lots of DNA, lots of food, some growing on trees, some walking around. There's some danger, but I mean, this is it. So, Anu back on the planet, somebody's got to replace the assassinated king. And this guy Split, that's the only guy who had a claim as prince, except Alalu. I mean, Anu has a claim. So Anu and this Alalu running away, Anu, as king, sends his oldest, smartest son, Inky, down to see if he's telling the truth. And this Inky's in the fisher suit. The other guy's his pilot, by the way. He's got wings. They show you. They come down. They're flyers. Today, every flyer, if you're licensed, gets his wings, doesn't he? Well, it comes from these artifacts. Now, as you see, a guy with wings, we'll call him Abgal, and he's Inky's pilot, and here's Inky, and they are the very first to come down to Earth to actually check things out. The guy on the right is the actual first to even land here, but he ain't going to last long because he wants to be king and he's committed capital offense. He's in deep trouble according to law, you know. So anyway, he's trying, I found gold, I'm the savior, you can't punish me. Matter of fact, reward me, I want kingship back. Inky comes down, sees there is gold, we got to colonize this place because it's going to take time. And it's going to require blah, 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 blah. So, next thing you know, Enlil and Anu come down and they check, and it's all for themselves. And they go, by God, that's right. And while Anu's here, let's clean up this thing like who's king, Alalu or Anu. So they get naked and they wrestle for it. Alalu, who killed the previous king, bites off the balls, this is no lie, bites off the balls of King Anu and swallows them, takes his manhood. And no more descendants for Anu. So anyway, he swallows his balls. And that's a foul. In watching this battle is Enlil and his son, Anerta, and they're calling foul. And Inky's there calling foul. Their dad just got screwed. So next thing you know, they grab Oalalu and they execute him. and they bury him on Mars. So if you've ever heard of the face on Mars, you're looking at his tomb. That's the guy on the right on 17A. He is the face on Mars, the rebel, buried there. But he had people loyal to him, and his pilot later tries the same thing. He gets, his name is Anzu. You'll find him under Ninurta, the battles Ninurta and Anzu. Lots of information on each page. So now you've got Anzu trying the same thing. He gets killed, finally, and he's buried with his rebel loyal god, Alalu. So Anzu buried with Alalu on Mars. Anu undisputed as king. Anu goes back to Nibiru. They got the plan. We're going to put 300 down here, 300 there, and start the colony. And 300 trucking this stuff and warehousing it. And where's the women? They didn't think about that. And how long they're going to stay? I guess they didn't think about that. They are colonizing it. And there's no water, no fee. Oh, my God. So they took any Earth women they wanted. They had children. Now they got a mess. A big mixed breed mess. Enlil hates it. He tries to kill them all with a flood. Enki keeps them alive. They rebuild it. So instead of gods fighting gods, like you see in the one on the left, it's earthlings loyal to that god fighting earthlings loyal to that god. Fighting earthlings loyal to that god, fighting earthlings loyal to that god. And we got a mess, don't we? One of these guys is guiding the communists. One of these guys created the Hebrews. They didn't always exist. So here comes the Hebrew line. You're not going to like this. The first 10 generations of the Bible, the Torah, they all married their sister, their half-sister, or their first cousin. Exact thing. So these guys, like Methuselah, are living 1,000 years. Like that King's List starts to try to tell you. Only the Bible isn't giving you any information. They go through all these guys that live 1,000 years prior to Noah. And how many years just went by and you know nothing historically about it? You better go to Mesopotamia and read the text if you want to know what really happened. Because it is a historical document in the Bible, but it is a very short historical document. They proved that these cities exist, and by God, they could not believe what they find. Some of the stuff we better hide. Some of the stuff we better just call a myth. We do not want this knowledge to everyone. So it's hidden all this time. This has been out there in the hands of museums and governments and so forth all this time. Recently, fairly recently, ISIS, which is a radical extremist version of the religion Islam, and we can talk about the beginning of these religions too. We'll get there. So Islam oh, hell, I lost my thought, and I'm sorry. I'll bring it back. Maybe I'll go to the beginnings of religion. Please bear with me. This is my opinion based on fact. Here's the facts. Make your own opinion, but look at the facts first. if you're here for knowledge. If you're not, please, again, for the third time, you're not going to like it. You're not going to believe it. So please, just don't even look. Don't listen. So to continue on, Abraham, all the way down to Noah, they married such and such, always marrying their sister, trying to make their offspring, number one, a legal offspring, and number as heir, and number two, they want that offspring to have the same thing they got, the God's blood. Therefore, they're bigger, taller, stronger, faster, smarter, and live by God far, far longer than an earthling. Read the Kings list, you'll see what, or read the Bible. How long did Methuselah live, and all the others down to Noah? Read the Bible. And then Noah comes along, and everybody's wiped out, but he and his family and their wives, okay? And then the next 10 generations from Noah down to Abraham, we're sticking with the Bible, they all married the exact same thing. Their sister. Don't have it? Half-sister. Don't have it? First cousin. For example, the last one on the list I said was Abraham. He married his sister, Sarah. She, because she's a giant mixed breed, and obviously Abraham is a leader of the Hebrew, you could tell very simply he's of the bloodline of the gods. He's a giant mixed breed. Abraham. How do I know that? Look at his lineage. How long did they live? And who's leading the Hebrews? It's got to be a demigod. Everybody else was led by demigods, went to Hebrews. So we follow it down to Abraham. Abraham's doing the same thing as the demigods do, as the gods do. He's making sure his heir has all the benefits of the God's blood as pure as possible. DNA, that's the whole game, DNA. That's why aliens are here in the first place, other aliens. There's so much DNA here. How could you resist? Excuse me. So, still looking at 17A, a black and white of Inky in a fishy suit. Silly, isn't it? Just a silly artifact. Don't pay any attention to it. You see the thing in the sky in the middle? It kind of looks like an eye. That is a disc. You remove all those wings that's trying to tell you this thing's flying. Remove those wings, and you have a flying disc with an eye in the sky. What? Eye in the sky? We're talking about watching the original landing of Inky. And there's an eye in the sky. What do you think happened once they settled this place? Did they put any satellites up to watch over man where they're not at? Can they still watch what's going on? Do you think they put any communication satellites up so they can talk back home? Do you think there's any interplanetary satellite communication signals going from ziggurat to ziggurat so they can talk to each other? Do you think there's any transportation, or do they walk with the earthlings everywhere they go? And how did they get here? Come on. So I'm giving you, here's all your ammunition for knowledge. I'm trying to save you a little time by listening to the audio, but it's not going to do you any good until you do it yourself. I'm just trying to assist. So as we go through these, you're seeing artifacts of the gods by the thousands coming out of these cities. Kish is no different. and we go through them and we go through them, and all of a sudden you're seeing the number 10, there's a seal, a ring with uniform on it. How did man get that far, you see? And look at the work in that ring. When did man learn to do that? You think so, huh? And who taught him? Oh, caveman just picked it up. You know, they're artists. And look at these little scratches on 11. Who gave man the idea of writing any kind of picture down on wet clay? And see the difference between man's wet clay and the God's wet clay? That's a huge difference. Have you ever seen a picture of what man looks like compared to a God? Pretty primitive. So here you're just simply looking at it. And by the way, the last one there, you're looking at a naked girl with her hands there. That's the goddess of love and war. And who's she with? Just another mixed breed king that she marries. You see, she's a widow. And after one true love dies, she's doing everybody that's in power, because she wants power all of a sudden. And she wants a lot of it. So go to an honest page. It will shock you. Go all the way down that page and see who Ananda might be today. It will shock you. This whole website will shock you, and you can call it whatever you want. Just leave if it makes you uncomfortable. So now we're scrolling down to, should we say, quotes, temple hymns, different things here coming out of Kish that are related to Kish. So I try to mark these things with a green, a must read, and then a star system behind it. A must read one star, that means it has a little information in there for you. A two star has a little more, and a three star is one of the better text there are. Read it. That's what I mean. And a must-read three-star that I write down three times, like the Sumerian Kings list, if you don't read it, you just hurt yourself if you're pursuing knowledge. I went through a lot of work to make this easy for you. So take advantage of it. Look at the must-reads. Look at the artifacts. Study whatever the description might give you an idea to study. Now let's go down a little further. It says Genesis 6:4. That's what the whole thing's about. The Nephilim, it says, this is a Christian Bible, were on the earth in those days and also afterwards when the sons, when the sons of God went to the daughters of men. You mean God can have sex with man? And had children by them. Oh my God, you mean you can unite two different breeds and have offspring? What? God and little girl? Holy shit, that ain't fair. And the children were the heroes of old. Oh, I see. Men of renown, the most important. They brought in front, in between the gods and the little bitty worker race earthlings. And all that worker race earthlings now is being directed by demigods, Nephilim, because they're either king or high priest. Now here's the kick in the teeth. Go to Ur. only a mixed breed is a high priest back then. Only a mixed breed is a king. No one else is getting close to that god. He's not walking with earthlings, although they are around and viewing this. He's walking with demigods and other gods, but he's walking on earth. So, I build it up to lay it on you, and I lose myself in the buildup. I'm sorry. I'll get back to it. But the point of this comes down to your religions come from Abraham. Abraham is a giant mixed breed. Oh, I remember the point. I knew it'd come back. Abraham's father. Imagine this. Abraham's a product of being married to your sister. Abraham's father, Terah, is his name. He is the high priest. Yes, I said high priest of Ur. That's like saying he's the giant mixed breed in charge of all your morals in New York or London. This is the one that is the metropolis that does, it feeds the gods, it feeds man, it has everything going for it, topside for the gods and then for man. There's literally a million cows where Abraham is. Let's don't think of Abraham as a shepherd boy. Abraham's father is sitting right next to God, the giant alien, living in that huge ziggurat as a mixed breed. That means nobody's allowed to get in that ziggurat but the mixed breed king and the mixed breed high priest. And who is one of them? Abraham's daddy. That makes Abraham, as a young child, one of the most powerful people in that entire city. Not a little shepherd boy that's struggling. I hate to ruin your day, but Abraham is a very, very powerful man because his father is the second most powerful man in the largest metropolis you have today. Imagine. What a lie you've been told. And follow the Sumerian kings list, and then you'll also follow the Hebrew kings list, only they don't call them kings until David. There's still giant mixed breeds who are leading the earthlings around in the desert or whatever else. So under Abraham, who is obviously what he is, what I'm describing to you, and all you got to do is look at the Temple of Ur, say you're a devout Hebrew, you know about Terah, you look at that Temple of Ur, and you'll choke. Why don't you know that? All this is kept from even the wisest who wish to study the religions. You're still going to find a bunch of lies. You'll find some truth, but you'll find a whole bunch of lies that I think it was Jesus who came down and says, why do you need a temple? You don't need it anymore. It's corrupt. I think he said, as they asked, and you might read the Nag Hammadi again, only if you can take it and you're interested in knowledge, the Nag Hammadi will say, Jesus wasn't too happy there. He's overthrowing the temple, and he's telling you to pray direct, not through a middleman. Don't pay the priest to pray. You don't need to pay to pray. Stay away from that corrupt temple and turn over a piece of stone. You'll see me right there, he tells Peter. Split a piece of wood. You'll see me right there. Peter, don't worry about looking for me. I'm here. What? what's this BS about Peter? Upon your shoulders, I'm building a church. Jesus never said that. He's there to tell you you don't need the church. Talk to God direct. So it depends on your religion, whatever the hell. Yeah, I can tell you, all of them came from Abraham, and I'll tell you that real quick. Abraham, okay, he's trying to get an heir. He's getting old. His sister, who's his wife, is getting old too. Still no heir. Wife is worried. I can't produce you an heir fast enough, or anybody else, for that matter. What's wrong? Finally, she says, here, take my servant girl, try to produce an heir with her. What happens? A boy comes out, they name him Ishmael. Ishmael is the apple of Abraham's eye, just loves this boy, and he's teaching him. But Abraham's sister wife isn't too happy. She didn't give him Ishmael. She's kind of jealous. Then all of a sudden, Abraham, he seems to always be, visited by angels. And the angels tell him that, and he knows immediately, they're angels. And somehow, by the way, Abraham can wrestle with these angels. Boy, this is really weird. So anyway, Abraham can't have a child. They're telling him, your wife will be pregnant now. She's 100. She can't be pregnant. That's what the Bible says. They're mixed breeds. She can be pregnant for many years to come. Read the king's list. Anyway, so here comes Abraham with this son from a concubine. All of a sudden, he's going to have a son from his official sister wife. That's a real heir, born of the double seed. You understand? The double seed, both of them, come from the bloodline of the gods. The concubine has no bloodline of the gods that's loaned to him. So Ishmael is not a double seed like Enki. Not a double seed. He's older. And he was loved. But Abraham, you got one now of the double seed. I want that one out, says his wife, sister. And says, take that woman and take that kid named Ishmael and get out of here. You'll just threaten the true heir to, there's no throne, is there? BS, the true heir to Abraham. Because Abraham's a powerful man. So you got to go, Ishmael, and we got Isaac, or Isaac. And then the deal with sacrificing Isaac and the miracle with the ram and all that. But under Ishmael, the rejected, much later comes Islam. Under Isaac, the new replacement. And not a friend to Ishmael at all, is the new replacement who takes over Isaac or Isaac, okay? So now we got bad blood immediately coming from the ones produced by Abraham. One is a double seed mixed breed. One is a diluted bloodline. Still got some gods in his bloodline. It comes from Abraham. Not nearly like Isaac. Isaac takes over. Under Isaac comes the Hebrews and then, of course, the Christians. Jesus being born of the bloodline of David, right out of the Hebrew book. Okay? Jesus also said, my father's from up there. His kingdom's up there. I'm here to do this and that, which you can believe or not, but his father's up there. and he's doing his father's work down here, just like they did in Mesopotamia. And is that the same God we're talking about up there on planet what? So as far as planet Nibiru goes, they look just like us, like Jesus does. Now, if you go to Ancient Astronauts, that page, because it's all right here. If you go to Ancient Astronauts, you're going to see some very, very well done by the best artists of the day paintings that are Christian paintings that are never to be seen by you. And I put them in order as far as what the theme painted is. So it begins third century, 200 and some odd BC, AD. That is the first painting. And what is it? It's the resurrection. In the third century, they painted the resurrection. Now, I want you to go there and look at that. That's the beginning of the slideshow under Christian paintings, under Ancient Astronauts. Scroll on down. You got to work to get the knowledge. Scroll on down. You'll see Christians with their paintings. These are the best artists of the day, and later it becomes the secret knowledge of the day. But it starts off with just the Jesus movement until the Roman Emperor Constantine moves in and conquers the Jesus movement, and it is now a Roman movement under the name Jesus. You don't know that, but that's what happened. Constantine called all the bishops together, told them to bring all the gospels. This is in the year 300 and something, okay? He has all the bishops bring all the gospels that are known to man about Jesus. We're all going to get together and decide one story, because we're starting to have too many variations here, and I'm the Emperor of Rome, and I'm going to decide what we go with. Sounds like a takeover to me. So here comes all the bishops. They bring these gospels, and lo and behold, there's over 100 gospels of Jesus. Now he has 12 disciples, and every one of them right. Every one of them. So there's over 100 of these things called gospels. Constantine says, can't have that one, can't have this one, can't have that one. Don't want them to know this or that or this or that. And next thing you know, all the Gnostic stuff, is the meaning knowledge, is thrown out. And all the faith stuff appears under who? Paul. Paul didn't walk with Jesus. He didn't experience Jesus at all. He was hired by the Romans to wipe them out. And if you can't wipe them out, then conquer the damn movement. So Paul starts and changes the topic. Nowhere does it say learn anything. It's all faith. And that is not what Jesus wanted or what his brothers wanted. But in comes Paul and the guy who ain't thinking too well, a guy named Peter, and they go off selling faith. And that's what you got under Constantine. You're left with faith. Where before there was 100 and some gospels that would give you knowledge. Now, the Emperor of Rome tells these bishops, every one of these we know can do gospels, because I don't like them. You burn them. And if you don't burn them, I'm going to burn you. So all these bishops go afraid for their lives, go, what do I do with these gospels of Jesus? Would you burn them? Well, some of them refused, and so you find the Dead Sea Scrolls. Somebody else refused, and so you find the Nag Hammadi Scrolls. And what are you finding, really? Are Essenes, those who are the strictest of the Hebrew race, who channel in the Messiah, who literally become pregnant with Jesus. That's an Essene. Her name is Mary. And if you look at that painting of the Annunciation, that Christian painting, you'll see a flying saucer beaming a light through a wall, hitting Mary deep in prayer on her knees as two angels remove the wings. They came from the flying saucer. They didn't use wings to come down. They come around the corner and they tell Mary she's going to be pregnant at 14. And she's going, well, and this is going to be a very special pregnancy, and, what? But they're the Essenes, and they're channeling in for hundreds of years a Messiah, and they are disciplined to that one task. One shows up at a 14, well, Jesus shows up, you call him what you want, I'm not here to do that. Jesus shows up, what you've got is a virgin birth. Now, how can it be all faith? No. Look at that painting. What you're looking at is an intergalactic embryo transplant, a fertilized egg that came down from God and was planted inside a virgin little girl. And this virgin little girl is going to catch a lot of shit for being pregnant, and they're telling her, don't worry. And after all, you are an Essene, and this is not going to look good. They follow the law, and you are pregnant out of wedlock? And you say this is something that takes special attention? It's not going to fly. So what happens? Another miracle, and somebody's telling Joseph, don't worry about it. Pick this girl and let's go. All these miracles start happening. How? Just like the miracles for the Hebrews in the desert, you got this food falling from the sky. What? Manna falling from the sky. That's how they lived. Being fed from a flying saucer. Yeah. And where did they find water? Strike your staff, Moses, and water will show up. Strike it right here, Moses. Well, they know where water is. And they're telling Moses, get them some water. While they drop down your food supply. Because you're not going to grow it in the desert. And they got you wandering around in the desert. In circles, by the way. So there's Moses wandering around in circles. But who's leading them? It's all from mixed breeds. With a bloodline to the gods. Or you have the wrong leader. As far as those days are concerned. And that idea ended about somewhere around 300 to 500 B.C. Now you got Alexander the Great. What's that? 300 and something B.C. He's a giant mixed breed. His mother will tell you, I had sex with Zeus. And he came in the shape of a goose. But it's Zeus. And that child is a child of God. And that child, all of a sudden, can compile the world's largest empire. Come on. It takes an Air Force to do half of what he did. And if you look at these artifacts, you'll find not only are they're mixed breeds, but they'll protect them. They'll protect them in battle. They'll protect them from disease. They protect that mixed breed if they care to have him around. So Noah's protected by Inky. We survive. Only because Noah's son is there. And who would be better to keep the Earthlings surviving than his son? And there you have it. Oh, and by the way, for you Hebrews, didn't Noah glow? Had a strange glow when he was born? And his daddy say, "That's not my child. Look at this kid. Did the gods come down and lay with my wife? That is not my child." And he goes to his daddy, and his daddy says, "Go see your granddaddy." And his granddaddy says, "Don't worry about it. This is a special kid. Be glad you got him." That was Noah. Kind of like the same thing going on with Mary and Joseph. So there's two of your religions. By the way, the Hebrew six-pointed star you will find under Nabu's page. Somebody, one of these giant aliens, had to take care of them in the desert and lead them out of Egypt. Well, if you look at the facts, the Hebrews were good warriors. The Egyptians, the Hebrews came in because of famine. The Hebrews cut a deal with the Egyptians who will feed you, but they want you to be the front line, you know, the most expendable in case there's war with the Hittites or whomever. They got to go through you to get to the Egyptians. So what do you say, Hebrews? And so the Hebrews take the deal. You keep us fed and we'll be your front line. And when it comes time to leave, they leave with all their possessions, which includes gold. They did build golden calves. It did include weapons and everything else they own. They left with. Moses leads them out. Of course, Moses had to do a few miracles to get them out. Do you see what I'm saying? You can do this from faith, or you can follow the facts. And they all tie into these writings of Mesopotamia. And no matter how you cut it, it's all going to go back to our original history. And when you look at today's religions, it's no different than this right here on this king's list. Somebody's got to tell the earthlings what to do. There's a high priest and there's a king. You follow me? It's called order. You want to take away this order man lives in by telling you the truth about these religions that have been flim-flamming you, quite frankly? Look closely at these paintings. Flim-flamming you. You'll see, and if follow me, you will see a painting or two of a Knight Templar pointing to the sky. There is a flying machine. One looks like this, another looks like that. It's a Knight Templar who is made to become the most respected of all, pointing at flying saucers. They're on their way to run the Muslims out of the Temple Mount of Jerusalem, so the fat Europeans can come in and visit Jerusalem. God, Rome did. Why can't the Christians? That's a good idea. So some brave fellows went down there and fought the Muslims. knocked them off the Temple Mount, and in come the Knights Templar. And the Knights Templar built all the defensive castles, incredible buildings. Wow. And the Knights Templar do all the tunnels, and the Knights Templar investigate what Solomon did. The guy who built the temple, they're there digging underneath it, looking to see what Solomon did. And Muslims don't do that, by the way. They're not interested in history prior to Muhammad. Christians really ain't interested in history prior to Jesus. And the Jews are the only ones looking at ancient history, but do not look at the Mesopotamian texts. It's a shocker, but it has been hidden, you see. It was not translated for you. It was translated for the special clubs, the secret societies, called Masons, which come from the Knights Templar. I hate to tell you this. Read it. Learn about it. The Knights Templar have been running things ever since they discovered alien technology and what really happened with the Hebrews and the Christians. What really happened, or must have happened, because they're holding the answers and evidence. What in the world is that evidence? They go back to Europe and they tell the Pope, quite frankly, you're done. I can take this religion down in a heartbeat, that fast. You're going to pay me. That Pope has been blackmailed for 1,000 years, paying Masons, doing what whatever these Masons want that Pope to do. You're a this. Next Pope is a that. You're doing whatever the Masons are doing, such as your banking. And when the head guy over the banking is found hanging from a bridge, things got strange in the Vatican. All of a sudden, people looked at the Vatican Bank. And you got a movie called The Godfather that tells you to look at the Vatican Bank. Any way you look at it, it's Masons blackmailing the Pope. It's Masons. You got the Hebrews, the Jews. They got evidence that you don't like. And when it comes to Islam, who doesn't even show up and keeps you in the 7th century, do you think they're going to like these artifacts? I started to tell you, the zealots like ISIS destroyed thousands. Every artifact of Mesopotamia they can find, they destroyed. So as they were building their little caliphate and they went from country to country, they went into their museums and destroyed all these artifacts. And if these artifacts were on a mountain, they blew up the mountain. If these artifacts were statues, they blew up the statues. If these artifacts were a city wall, they blew up that city wall. You follow me? There's a side of a mountain that had, and you'll only see these on my website, because they do not exist. Many of these no longer exist. So you have struck it rich if you're interested in hidden knowledge. It all is right here. And you take what I show you here, and then you add the Masons and figure out today. The Masons in 1306, on Friday the 13th, the Pope and the King of France, who are deeply in debt to the Masonic World Bank, decide we can't pay the bills. Let's just steal their money. We'll conquer them, take our soldiers that we borrowed money to support. will take our soldiers and will attack their main castle and try to grab their money. We think it's at the main castle here in France. They have many of them, and they have many escape routes just for such a madness. These guys are the World Bank. In 1190, in the 1200s, they're the wealthiest organization you ever seen. And now, because everybody owes them money, and they control everything, and build every ship, and control everything that moves, all of a sudden it's called, we got to get rid of these guys. I'm a king, you're a pope, and we don't rule nothing. We got to get rid of these guys, and we could sure use their wealth, because they got it all. And we want their land. They got it all. The Pope declares them heretics. That's all the king needs. Let's go get them, burn them, kill them all, eliminate them, and take their money. Isn't that the way religions do it? Well, that's the way the Pope and the King of France decided to do it against the Masons, the World Bankers, the guys who are running everything and elected to nothing. They got no bloodline. Mason King, they don't like kings. They don't like authority. They don't like being told what to do. And now they're going to be killed and robbed. Well, they're a little smarter than that. All their gold, we'll call it, all their riches and everything they own that blackmails popes, that stuff is loaded on ships and gone before they ever arrive to, and there's only a few of the Masons left, the Knights Templar, only a few left. They arrest them all, throw them in prison, torture them to death, and kill them. The main guy, they burn him to death. Either way, where's the money? Where's the money? Where's the money? Tell me now. You understand? You're on the rack. Where's the money? Tell me you're a heretic so I can cover my ass. Confess to... You name it. Here's the cross. What'd you do to it? Great. Now I've got reason to burn you at the stake. And so they eliminate what they think is the Knights Templar. Totally wrong. All their wealth and half of them. Some go to Scotland and reestablish and hide there. Some go to Portugal and try to hide there until... the Inquisition, the Pope, finds its way into Portugal looking for him. So now the Knights Templar got to leave Portugal, and they're going up. Where can you go? Back up to Scotland, and from Scotland to the New Land, and nobody knows it, but here they are in the New Land. But if you sail that way, you fall off... the world, right, Pope? So nobody can sail across that ocean, right, Pope? And by the way, you can't read the Bible, can you? Some heretic named Luther gave you the ability to read the damn Christian Bible. Excuse me, the Christian Bible. Luther, is he loved by you, Pope? They don't want you having knowledge, period. I mean, I can argue this fact till I'm blue in the face. None of them do. Jesus didn't like the high priests at the temple. He doesn't... They don't want you having Jesus' knowledge. They killed him. But what was the knowledge he left? Well, it's in the Gospels. And what happened to them? You understand... Now all that's left for you Christians actually is the Nag Hammadi, which you don't even know about. It is seen saving these texts found in Nag Hammadi, Egypt. thousands of years later, 2,000, just like the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Nagamani was even found first by 1 year, but you never hear about it. And the Dead Sea Scrolls, for years and years and years, we just can't put them together. Gee, we just can't match these pieces. And one, God knows, just like the guy invents things in his garage, one guy says, you know what? Weren't those scrolls written on animal skins? That's DNA. Why don't we just simply match the DNA on every piece and you'll know exactly how to put these pieces together and you can read the entire text of the Dead Sea Scrolls that we just can't put together so you'll never get to learn what's in them. Well, the Nagamani Scrolls didn't have to go through all that shit, excuse me. And I suggest you read some of those, at least the ones that are written by Jesus' brother or other disciples that you never thought had books. How about one from Mary Magdalene? How about one from Judas? Oh, we can't have that. The Mary Magdalene one talks about Jesus kissing her on the lips, loving her more than any of them, telling her things he didn't tell them, and Peter is jealous and wants to know. Others are telling him to shut up. This doesn't go the way you think it is. You've got Jesus' brother James saying, Jesus is teaching us knowledge. You even got Gospels saying, if you do this right, the Father can't prevent you from entering heaven, and the Father can't kick you out of heaven. Now, he's talking about heaven, and he's talking about his Father. He's telling you how to get around his Father and still get to heaven. And his Father or anyone else cannot throw you out of there. I better pay attention. You're going to have to read the forbidden text. It's in the Nagamani. I suggest you find James and Thomas and you name it. Everything you don't know about Jesus that's left is in those Nagamani scrolls. That didn't go through that. Gee, we can't just put them back together for decades and decades. Gee, they're, you know, it was discovered in 1947. What's today's date? You reading them? What you're reading, you don't even know if they fit together. The little you can read. So they make it say whatever they want. You don't want it. And that's why the Hebrews do what they do, preserving their texts. Even though you might find a slight variation. Again, again, again. Religions are there to control the people, handed down through the alien giants. These religions were later turned into warrior monks. My earthlings loyal to me under whatever versus your earthlings loyal to you under whatever symbols you want. So the ones loyal, for instance, to Nanner, you follow the moon crescent symbol. Do you find that anywhere today prominent? The moon crescent symbol was established 4,000 at least B.C., probably more like 200,000 B.C., but we'll say 4,000 B.C., the moon symbol was established for the god Nanner, living in Ur, the god of Abraham, is the moon god. You know, Monday, Moon Day, Sunday, Is the sun God's day? Who is the sun to the moon god? That's Nanarunutu. What are they doing in your texts? And you don't even know it. So here's the moon god that you find in every piece of Islam anywhere you go. Here's the six-pointed star god. That moon god is an earth. The six-pointed star god is where you might find the Tower of Babel. Yes, the Tower of Babel. So you're going to find that one over here. You're going to find this one over there. And these symbols are used today. The Jewish symbol is the six-pointed star. That is the sixth planet flying into our solar system. An eight-pointed star would be the eighth planet. Guess what? We're lucky number seven. So if you see authority with a seven-pointed star on it, that is the authority of Enlil. And law enforcement wear seven-pointed stars. Never put any of this together until you put it together and make it available for you to understand. Please look at this stuff. You won't believe what you'll learn. And you might get angry. So here I published it. And it's for free. And you're not going to like what you hear if you're a zealot. You're going to want this stuff destroyed. If you're looking for knowledge to where even the Father can't keep you out, that's Jesus saying that. I suggest you read what you can read in Mesopotamia. And you look at, more than once, these artifacts. And the best way to understand it is right here at this website. I do this for those who want to know. 24 years minimum involved here, doing unbelievable amount of hours. Anybody who goes through this website will know that. Unbelievable amount of knowledge right here. The whole story. Everything you've been lied to. Now, shall we continue having war or shall we be done with it? Knowledge. The key is knowledge. Faith can be led down any road. Knowledge can never be taken from you. Never. Once you learn something, no king can take that from you. That was the whole purpose of education. No matter how broke you are, you're still educated. You can bounce back. I thought that's why we were educated. Now we're not educated at all. And what could educate you, you would never see. For 1,000 to 2,000 years hidden. Well, there's enough of us now with some brains and enough science around to check some things out. Here's the whole story. All of a sudden, the whole story is available to you. Africa, Asia, South America, North Pole. I don't care where you're at, Greenland. It's available to you for the very, very first time. I suggest you pass it on. But I do suggest you know what you're saying before you try to say anything. Take a look. This isn't for beginners. This is for thinkers. This is where control of everything you've ever been in exists. They have this knowledge and you don't. So I say, quit blackmailing me, quit bribing me, quit robbing my pocket. I'll talk to God direct. From my garage. From my toilet. I can talk to Jesus anywhere. I can talk to Muhammad's God, Allah, anywhere. I can talk to the Hebrew's God, Yahweh, whether he be I am Yahweh, El, Elohim, Jehovah. That is who? God the Father. Who's God the Father? It's in all three religions. Who's Abraham? All three religions. What's the history? All three of the religions. It's down to Noah, down to Abraham. All three religions. Why do we need them? All we need is this. Why do you need a middleman? And why would you pay him? Jesus says. Look at them. They're corrupt. Well, do you think the money they're making off of you in government and in religion, you're double taxed? What do you think? They want you to just not send them money? Would you just not pay your tax if you learned they're just totally corrupt? Would you quit your religion and quit sending them money at least? When you learn maybe they've been lying the entire time? Why would they lie to you? These are the people you've trusted the most. So I say to you, if you're still with me, please leave. This is not for you. And now, the rest of you, man, take a look. Listen to what I'm saying. See what I have brought you. This stuff is available. I couldn't get it. I was just a guy crazy enough to find out what it means. And they do not want you to know. I was visited, by the way, by Masons. Once you join them, they shut you up. You can't say these secrets out loud if you're a Mason. So the Masons paid me a visit. I'll let you do the rest of the studies. I've given you the exact library to go to. I've given you the pictures, so it's a show and tell. Now I've given you an audio for a little guidance and a little background and a little color on top of that. I'm sorry for that. I can't resist. This is my chance to explain to you how bad we've been treated. And I don't care who you are. Why would you have your son killed over what? What? Stop it. Stop it. You're supposed to be the brains. Find a way to stop these wars. I found my way. Now you learn this and spread it. Why would you have war after knowing this? Would you lay your life down for that king or that high priest after knowing this? They know you wouldn't. I know you wouldn't. That's why you've never seen this. So I kind of change things. I don't advertise it. It's for those. You must come to see me to see, well, see my website to see this. I'm sorry. This is all egotistic speaking. This is not my work. I was led by the unseen, literally shaken out of my bed. Get up. I want to show you something. The unseen did this to me over and over and over. I am not a PhD in cuneiform. You got to go to Oxford to find the people who are hiding this from you, in Princeton and Yale. You got to go to the opium dealers. Please check into that. There's another one for you. Not only are they Masons making tons of money, but cash is the name of the game, off the books. That's what smugglers do. Make a ton of cash off the books. Who's the biggest smuggler in the entire world today? Well, I'll put it this way. There were those who accused the CIA of smuggling heroin during Vietnam. Smuggling heroin into the United States to increase the variety of people and the number of people taking the addicted drug, heroin, brought in by the wonderful war that LBJ put us in and Kennedy refused to do. All of a sudden, Kennedy is killed, who, by the way, is pledging to eliminate the CIA. Kennedy is killed, Johnson is in, and the CIA is back in the opium business. How do I know what I'm talking about? Let me give you one and let you do the rest. First of all, I'll give you this. The original Blue Bloods, you got a double last name. It came from the original Blue Bloods because a Blue Blood's name is the power. And when a Blue Blood has a girl, and that girl marries somebody else, that girl keeps her Blue Blood name. Anyway, so a whole group of people starts marrying Blue Blood girls, such as Rockefeller. Check the Delano family in the Rockefellers. Delano, you know, that wonderful girl that's married to Rockefeller, who really was a lesbian all the way and not a good thing to look at. But Rockefeller married her to get to the Delanos. Check the Delanos. You're talking about the biggest smuggler the United States had at the time. He made also the wealthiest man the United States has in, say, 1910, during the Industrial Revolution starting. The opium dealer, Rockefeller. The opium dealer beats Rockefeller, FDR. The Delanos are beating the railroad man, the oil man. The real cash is in smuggling. Ask any crook. Ask any government. And you want some cash on the side? Smuggling. What just happened to America with millions upon millions smuggled and tons upon tons of killer drugs smuggled? And tons upon tons weapons going both ways. Who's kidding who here? You think that just comes in without permission? And you think nobody's putting up a defense on that, I don't know, you call it a border? That millions are coming across? You think that's good for America? Who do you think is doing that smuggling? Who is making money on each and every person? Let me give you smuggling. You got people you can smuggle. You got weapons you can smuggle. Okay? And you have drugs that you can smuggle. There are your three biggest cash cows in the world. Guess who does those? And guess who controls them all? Guess who put a bullet in Reagan's heart? Almost immediately, 3 months after becoming president, which would have made Bush president, Walker Bush. Again, the Bushes marrying some girl out of the opium smuggling family contract. There are opium contracts that go back before the colonies were states. Read about the opium wars and why China would not accept British ships, so British used colonial ships to smuggle the opium in and picking up the tea coming back. They don't buy your opium. They got tired of it, England, so they banned you, and now you're not getting any tea. And your poor ships... we're only loaded one way, bringing tea back. China buys nothing from you, and you so to balance your unbalanced trade, because the Bank of London says, King, we're bankrupt. we're buying tea from China and we sell them nothing. Does that sound like anything that a guy named Trump's trying to solve in trade imbalances? It's a way to bankrupt the nation. Everyone knows that. So, England says we have to sell China something or forget the tea. So they tried to get them hooked on opium. They tell them to drink it in the tea. It's do better. So what do we do? What do we do? Well, we got this thing out of India. Let's do the opium trick. It's not working. Let's boil it down and see if that'll be better. So they come up with a black tar. And they tell the Chinese that they smuggled this shit in. They say, smoke it. And guess who is hooking the Chinese on opium? England. Hooper don't like it. No more British ships in his harbor. England goes, well, I need tea. And we're making money here. I've got a cousin that's the governor of a colony over there. We'll use his flags on his ships and smuggle this opium back in there and get us some tea. And so opium contracts went through the colonies, and opium contracts went through the new nation, and opium contracts built the blue blood families. Not the railroad. You understand? Opium, the number one cash cow of America, has always been opium and marijuana. Always. One opium ship to China, it was worth five slave ships. Five. So if you're a very wealthy man and you're connected, therefore you're in charge of a ship, very expensive, you're an experienced captain. What trip do you want to make? You go into Africa empty, you come back with slaves, and it takes five of those to equal one that Delano has to make. Or Walker has to make from the Bushes. Or Fitzgerald has to make from the Kennedys. Are you following me? When you find out the truth, you'll find America was built on opium. And America finds out you can't go to war without having opium. And we find out all kinds of nasty things that maybe you don't know about. I'm showing you the biggest secret of them all right here. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you'll come back. I thank you for coming. And if this upsets you, please forget you ever saw it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's not for you. Once again, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Please, if you enjoyed it, come back.